हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 1, Realizations of Vyasa and Trance, page 45, Anucheda Prakashita, from Jiva, Shri Jiva Toshani. To understand the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami first analyzed the heart of Sukadev in Anucheda 29. Then he began analyzing the experience of the writer, Sri Vyasa, whose trance is the basis for his composing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami concludes this analysis in the present Anucheda by confirming it with the words of Sri Suta Goswami from the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10, which is the Atmarama verse. When Suta Goswami finished describing the trance of Srila Vyasadeva, Shonaka Rishi asked, quote, "If Sukadeva Goswami is completely renounced, having no interest in anything, on account of being absorbed in the bliss of the self, what caused him to study this lengthy Bhagavat Purana?" Suta Goswami replied with these two verses, 1.7.10 and 11. Right? Because the question might come up is because then the aspect of religion. Now, if he's gone beyond that platform, right? He's on the liberated platform. Why would he be interested in study? Right? Because generally, study is what you do to get to the liberated platform. Right? So that would be, and he says lengthy study. It's not like a short little thing or something. So then the question comes up, why would he do that? So that's the point. By this answer, Suta Goswami confirmed all the realizations of Srila Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami. First, he gives a general principle that all varieties of self-satisfied persons, though liberated from material bondage, they still desire to engage in Krishna consciousness. Second, he gives an example of the specific application of the principle. Sukadeva Goswami. Thus, Suta Goswami establishes that Sukadeva Goswami's was not an isolated case. Rather, Sukadeva's experience is confirmed by many other Atmaramas. And the only reason for such attraction is the attributes of Lord Hari. Because the point is if you're Atmarama, you're attracted by transcendence, not by the mundane. And so Krishna, being beyond the mundane, you know, being the ultimate transcendence, he'll naturally be attractive. Since all attractiveness comes from him, even the attractiveness in the material world, then if you are attracted to Krishna, then you're attracted to what's beyond the material and what is actually the attractive feature of the transcendence. Right? If Brahman realization is an attraction to simply the experience of Krishna's effulgence, that means the effulgence of his qualities, then why not the active qualities in relationship with the devotees? That would be even more. So, yeah. In this way, Jiva Goswami shows conclusively that Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Vyasadeva, and Suta Goswami are all fixed in the same realization. Hence, the Srimad Bhagavatam should be studied and interpreted based on their realizations. Other interpretations must be considered deviant from the natural sense of the book. Because you have three transcendental personalities, they're describing it, then makes it perfect. Remember the question that came up the other day about the form of Bhagavatam. Was that here? About that you have the Bhagavatam, because it was being pointed out that you have the the point being made that Bhagavatam was written before Mahabharata and after Mahabharata. So then it was given that in seed form it was there in the before Mahabharata. But he wrote the Mahabharata as the conclusion. But then Narad Muni pointed out that the aspect of devotion wasn't brought to the front fully and properly in the Mahabharata. Right? Basically, religion's brought out, but not Saddharma so strongly. So then, that's when he composed in the second form. And so the documentation of that is what he originally spoke, then how that was then spoken to Parikshit Maharaj, and then how that was then spoken by Suta Goswami to the sages of Naimisharanya. So then you have the presentation of transcendence from three transcendental personalities. That combination, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's then the form in which it must be approached. Because otherwise, if it's approached from others, from various aspects of religion, it won't be enough. It has to be seen from the platform of transcendence. So, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. There is acceptance of what Vyasa saw in Samadhi by all followers of all knowers of Tattva. Nirgunanta means persons free of ahankara, which is generated from Mahatattva. Right, so that means even the impersonalists, the Maya bodies, and that this won't be enough. They have to be free from that. Right? Because the Maya bodies are working on the part, it's all illusion, so they're just dealing in illusory state anyway. Because that means if everything's illusion, what's their context? It's only because of illusion. Right? It means if you only exist because Brahman has been covered by illusion, then your very existence itself can only deal with the illusory concept. Right? That's the Maya body's idea. So they can't go actually beyond. The identity of the self within the Atma is not extinguished at this time. This will be explained in Bhagavat Sandarbha. Vyas had Sukadev hear certain verses, such as Putana attaining the position of a nurse, and Krishna acting as Arjuna's charioteer and doorkeeper. In Brahma Vivarta Purana, it is explained that Sukadev was born from a womb, but in Mahabharata it is said that he was not born from a womb. Footnote 17. Mahabharata says Sukadev appeared from the fire of a stick of wood. It is also described that he accepted a wife and had a daughter. This is adjusted by explaining that the different events happened in different day of Brahma. Right? So the different cult of Veda. So you're going to get that. Is that this pastime is always going on. Because Vyasadeva always has a son. The son's always Sukadev. Like this. And so in different times it'll take on the different aspects. So depending upon what you're explaining, you're going to bring out different things. You know, does that make sense? Just like if someone's asking questions and I'm giving reference from some personality. Now let's say we're talking about the personal exchanges and all that. Then I'll give example from when he's at home. Right? But if I'm talking about how efficient he is and getting things done and how professional he is, then I'm going to talk about him at work. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's the same, you could say the same principle of personality, but you're dealing with different aspects of it. So in different days of Brahma, then you'll see different manifestations. Right? Does that make sense? So depending on which one you're discussing, what point you want to make, you'll talk about that point.
And the same principle.
Yeah, it's the same principle. But it doesn't mean he can't be liberated. You know, Vyasa's liberated, he's married. So it can't be that he can't be married. It's just that in this one, he's not. But then there's talk about that he was. So he attracted him by that. So the point was, is Sukadev, in one sense, was already attracted before because Krishna had come and discussed with him. But in another time, it says how Vyasadeva, through the Bhagavatam verses, attracted him. So that appears to be another cultivator. But the principle still remains. It's an eternal principle. Because Sukadeva is a transcendental personality. And so whether it happened this day of Brahma or another day of Brahma, does it matter for when you're working on the eternal platform? Right? That's the...
Maharaj,
yes.
I have a question. When we say that Shukadeva Goswami, Vyasadeva Goswami are all teaching the same realization, so it means it's only a person who can understand the Acitya Bidabida Talva who can understand.
Can fully understand. Means if they have any realization that's in line with the Vaishnav Siddhanta, they'll be able to appreciate. But to get the full appreciation, then that would require a Chintaveda Veda Tattva. Because otherwise, then there's an emphasis in one way or another, and you don't actually understand what you're talking about. Does that make sense? To be able to see how the two go together and work together, you may not be able to see. Just like, let's say, like when we were out this time, there's an advertisement. And this advertisement was talking about that, you know, how everybody should be, you know, be benefit. It was one of these kind of welfare kind of things. Everybody should be benefited, all this and that, and, you know, we shouldn't be seeing these differences, why one is getting, one's not, you know, because, and the last point that it made is, you know, why are we worried about this? Because we're all one. You know, like this. You know, but it was being done as regular advertisement. You know, so they're trying to point out is that, yes, all the peoples of the world, we're all one, we're all, you know, we're all together, we're all in this. So then it struck me is that this kind of, this point of equality and this aspect, it's overemphasizing the oneness. And there's no difference because it's oneness that we're all one, but it's not about me having a relationship with anybody in this oneness. It's just the feeling of the oneness that creates the feeling. Oh yes, we're all in this together, and that creates the feeling, not the interaction that we have as individuals. Does that make sense? Like that. While others then overemphasize the difference. And then from that, then they're acting, and then it creates problems. You know, then you have the social stratas and this and that and so many differences. And so then you'll accept some, not others, and then in this way. Does that make sense? There's a problem. So the Achintamata Veda Tattva, then you can see the proper balance of these. Well, others then, you know, it may work, generally speaking. To me, especially within the Vaishnava Siddhanta, it's always going to work. But the fineness of some of the points won't be able to be appreciated. So, this makes sense. Yeah. Yes?
Doubt. We preach Achintya Bheda Tattva, but then, as described previously, it's a period over 3,000 years. Like Mimamsakas, then Buddha came, then Shankara, then Ramanuja, then Madhva, then Mahaprabhu, and like that. So historically, it's a huge amount of time. And we see the progression. But then we just serve Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva to new Bhakta. So then in his head, it's like a bomb exploding.
Really? I always find that new people is actually very easy.
In the beginning, but then when they think about it, it's like...
Yeah, but the point is at least they it understood it and they think about it. You know, so at least then it's a bomb there. But if you deal with a you know, a little bit, you know, older group, then it just bounces off.
So the doubt is how successful could we actually be presenting, you know, like highest philosophy.
But it's the core of how it works. So then, based on that, everything functions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you have to make it practical how the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is working. That's then the point. Because see, is that you're going to make something useful or understandable because of being able to bring it into the context of something within their experience. You know, that's why examples are there. Examples then means we're trying to understand something beyond our experience through something of our experience by comparing it.
Yeah.
Right. So you just have to find the right comparison so that they're able to start to apply it. And then by that sincerity, Krishna will reveal. Because it's going to be Krishna revealing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there has to be that context of it has that original position, but it's also practical. That's why we call it a science. Is that it always works, it can be applied. It's just that one has, by association, appreciates how to apply that. So, so I generally see it's not a problem for them because they catch it. And then they're going to, as they go, get at least you have to consider is that they get past Shravana into Manana. And then in Manana, there may be some difficulty seeing how to apply it. But that's why Manana is there, is to see that you're taking the understanding and applying it into your situation. And it works in one, but then some other situation, and you have to contemplate till you start to see what's the common element between all of them. Right? But when you deal in many times elder circles, then you don't even get passion. You don't even start Shravana. You know, but a maximum you don't get past the doubt, right? Because they don't have a concept, a mundane concept of spirituality. They just don't have any concept. So it may be that they're looking at things that they think are spiritual and it's mundane, but you can point out how it's beyond. So they haven't integrated the mundane into the spirituality. So the more they've done that, the more you have doubts. So the more there's mixing the transcendental with the mundane and a commitment to that, then it's going to be more difficult. You know, hence the the Viennese music school charging more for someone who's studied music than someone who hasn't. Makes sense. But it's the same thing. You're going to use that for everybody. But you'll just find that accepting it and that will be easier for someone who's new. Because then they have something to base it on, and then, you know, you give it a few years, then 2, 3, 4 years, then they'll have been able to see how that applies into what they're doing. But if that hasn't been done, then they're going to come to that practical position after 3, 4 years of being comfortable with Krishna consciousness and its practice, but they don't see it in that context. So then now, how do you hold together these things? Right? So then you're going to compare it to something from before. You know, some religious process from before. So unless you've accepted the Vedic religious process, then you will go back to whatever your previously conditioned processes are. Because the conditioned soul can't work without religion. Right? So they must go into that. So then that's why you see coming up that, if we have education, then that will be not the education Prabhupada's talking about. You know, he's talking about just studying his books. That's a higher education. He's talking about the modern education. With that, then we'll have qualified for Krishna consciousness. Or the other day came up the aspect of, morality and ethics and that. Until that's introduced, then we won't be able to have, you know, communities and relations and things like this. And that will improve, therefore, the devotional. So there's all this idea that unless you have all the things that people have been searching for on the mundane platform, right? Unless there's money, unless there's justice, unless there's morality and all that, unless we have this kind of so-called impersonal concept of personalism and all these kind of things, then all these things can work. So, you know, you have to work hard, you have to make money, you have to have position, you have to have authority, everything that we tried before didn't work, that's why we joined. Now suddenly that's the solution. But no. It's just now you're committed to your anartas. You know, that you're connecting to Krishna, that's nice. But that's for you personally. But then now to say that this is actually the panacea for everybody, then that's not going to work, because everybody doesn't have the same problem. Does that make sense? You know, if someone just now, after 30 or 40 years, is now saying we need morality, that means they must never have had it. Otherwise, why weren't they functioning with that from the beginning? Why didn't they say Vaishnav etiquette is morality? You know, because as Lord Chaitanya say, you're supposed to deal with all living entities equally. You know, you're supposed to be considerate of all living entities. So isn't that something we've heard from day one? So why is it only now someone's saying, we need ethics and morality? That means they never understood that. It means how did they not? That means they must never have had, or what they had was very minimal. Does that make sense? So they may have, you know, on personal social dealings, you know, and etiquettes, that just means people will deal with you properly. But on an overall communal kind of thing, then they didn't have that kind of concept. Otherwise, why is it now after like that, 30, 40 years? Now it's becoming an issue. Right? When Trinada Pisu Niche Na, that is the core of ethics. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So that's what you're supposed to do. And then you could say, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. So that's your morality. You know, so it's like we had that from the beginning. So why isn't that seen as that? Another says, oh, but that's not enough. That means then they don't understand at all. Because that's where it starts from. So, does that make sense? Yeah, because the modern morality is how I can keep Dunham, Janam, and Sundarim, but not I won't, my Dunham, Janam, Sundarim won't bother your Dunham, Janam, Sundarim. So therefore, now we have community. You know? Does that make sense? And yes, everybody else should be humble. I don't have to be. Everybody else should be tolerant. Everybody else should be respectful. And I'll be respectful to others when it's appropriate according to, you know, I getting some benefit from it. And so that's platform of morality. Then it's like, oh wow, hey, this is what we're missing, right? So yes.
It's interesting that if Krishna dispels all Arjuna's doubts about ethics and morality in the first and the second chapter.
Yes.
And then that's all, but it never discussed again.
No, because you don't need to. You have to see what actually is, because you could say, yes, these things are ethics and morality, but on what platform? On pranamoy. When they're talking these higher and this and community, it's all pranamoy. And most of the time, they'll talk that as a philosophy, but in practical application, it'll be a lower level of pranamoy, where it's just them and their community. Like that. And then if push comes to shove, then it'll drop down to themselves. Yeah, it'll just go down. So this idea that morality actually starts, theistic morality starts at accepting the Veda. Right? So unless you're accepting it and basing it on Veda, it's not actual real morality. It may be the local practiced morality, and that may be in line with the Veda, and that's fine. You know, people may not know, be nice to somebody, that's Vedic. But they don't know the Vedas, but they follow that. And so that's just a local, I think it's called Lokaika, like that. It just means what the people follow and all that. And so that's good, what connects to the Vedas. And those that don't, then maybe the principle of it's nice, but the detail is not. So, yeah. Good. Okay, Vriti, having arrived at the conclusion of the Pramaya, or what is to be known from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Jiva Goswami next outlines the theme of the Satsang Darbas, right? So now we know that Vyasadeva's trance of this absorption, how Krishna's everything and everything's Krishna, but at the person, he's separate from that. And being separate, he's in complete control of his external, of all his energies, including the external. Like that. And so therefore then, now we've established that Bhagavatam is the authority for understanding that. So now basically you say the main thrust of the Tattva Sandarbha has now been established, because this is the Praman. Right? So now he's going to outline the scheme of the Sat Sandarbhas. How now he's going to discuss, based on this, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Yeah? No?
Just trying to clarify, based on this means that the Bhagavatam is the top scripture?
Yes, it's the foundation. In other words, we'll quote from Mahabharata, we'll quote from the other Puranas and Nyaya and all that, but from the perspective of Bhagavatam. So that's why you see is sometimes you can be using a quote from Mahabharata and it fits very nicely. And sometimes the quote from Mahabharata will be used and it doesn't fit nicely. Mm-hmm. So much of the time that will be due to whether it's seen in line with Bhagavatam or not. Does that make sense? So when you see all the Vedic literatures in line with Srimad Bhagavatam, then you see that there's no contradiction between any scripture. That's the actual position. But when we see that there's contradiction, that means we're not seeing according to Bhagavatam. We're seeing according to some level of the religious processes. And we're, by our conditioning, we'll take one of them more prominently than another. Does that make sense? And so that becomes the difficulty. Yes?
Because sometimes opposition, specifically Madhvas, they say that we quote whatever, Shruti, and then according to Bhagavatam, it sounds like that. But then they say it's a stretch, that the Gaudiyas just stretch it according to Bhagavatam, but it's not what it says in the Shruti itself.
But the thing is if the means it means when you have the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, right? So then four of those will be related to language, right, to the Sanskrit. So you're going to have the Siksha, which means the proper pronunciation of the letters and the combinations, because sometimes when they come together, then they change like that. And so then you're going to have Siksha, Chanda, the meters, mm-hmm. like that. So generally in those two, there's not going to be much of a problem though. Then you're going to have Vyakarana, and then, you know, that'll also be basically okay, but it just depends. We use Narayan's grammar while others use Panini. It's dealing with the same points, just it will bring out more detail. And then you have Nirukta, which is the vocabulary. So now the Nirukta, in the Vedic sense, it means the obscure use of words. Because you see in the Veda, when they describe something, it's dealing in an obscure way. Not that it's not dealing direct, it's just using obscure meanings. Mm-hmm. The classical Sanskrit tends to use more, less obscure. Unless it's being very poetic in that, but it's still, then you can understand it's presenting a mood or a flavor or something like that. You know, like the guy is saying the lady is like a lotus flower or something like that. So he's not just saying she's a flower, but there's that relationship. It's the mood. You know, the flowers are fine, they're beautiful, they're nice, they, you know, all these kind of aspects. So in the Veda, when it says water, now if they're taking it just that means the element water, that's fine as long as that's what we see the sentence is talking about. But if we see the sentence is not talking about water, then we understand that water is then Varuna. So then, depending on what it is there, you're either talking about taste, so the rasa that is there, you know, or you're talking about the control of things, because Varuna controls all the kings and everything like that. Does that make sense? Or that he's the controller of the demons, so if the water, just as water washes away impure things, so then here is that the control of the demons washing away impure things like that. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to see the context, because the meanings where the direct meaning applies, you'd use it where the other's not, but they have to know is that the word has more meanings, it has subtler meanings. So they're used to just taking it in that way. That may be why they're called tattva bodies, because they just take it in this particular category. So they can't see the poeticness of something or the fineness of it. Or, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that becomes the problem, is that for them, yes, they can't understand. And so that's why we don't really deal with them much. You know, if you want to deal with the mud, we'll stick to Pejwar. But, you know. Adhikarana 2. It says, Adhyayana 3 Adhikarana... Oh, before was Adhikarana... Adhyaya 3 Adhikarana 1. So now this is Adhyaya 3 Adhikarana 2. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam's meshes define in terms of understanding the Jiva and the Supreme Brahman. Anuchedas 50 through 55. Adhikarana Prakashika. After describing the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana Tattva according to the realizations of Srila Vyasadeva, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam and Sukadeva Goswami, Bhagavatam's chief speaker, Srila Jiva Goswami now begins to elaborate on this knowledge in detail. First, he describes the whole tattva in brief in the rest of Tattva Sandarbha, and then elaborates on this subject in the next five sandarbhas. The whole Tattva Sandarbha serves as an introduction to the Sat Sandarbhas, as it explains the overall subject established through the Sat Sandarbhas. Technically, this relationship is called the Vacha-Kata-Sambandha, or the relationship of the subject with the context of the book. The subject is stated in the second verse of Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu. Absolute reality is to be understood herein. So, Jiva Goswami begins his discussion with this verse in Anucheda 50. This verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 112, indicates the Sambandha generally, without describing the Lord's Swarup, qualities, or vibhutis. Hence, Jiva Goswami in the next Anucheda 51 quotes another verse, 1-11, in order to describe the Vastu or Tattva with implications of its Swarup. Can I make it louder?
Yes.
They also put more reverb in something.
I'm not sure, but it appears that when different personalities come to Mayapur, then the sound is adjusted accordingly.
I see.
When they go, it's... And when they come, it's...
Oh, I see.
That's my personal... I can't say.
I see. I see. So it's all personal, ultimately.
Exactly.
Yes. Then in the next three Anuchedas, 52 and 55, addresses the various misconceptions on the subject of the Absolute Truth. First, it refutes the Buddhist claim that, quote, there is no real consciousness as the consciousness kept changing at every moment, end quote. By quoting from scriptures how the Absolute Truth, Brahman, is eternal with complete knowledge and bliss. Then he refutes the Mayavadi's claim that, quote, there is no difference between this Absolute Truth, Brahman, and Jiva because the scriptures describe the oneness, end quote. By explaining the difference between the Jiva and Brahman based on the scriptural quotations where both Paramatma and Jiva are mentioned separately. Then Jiva Goswami explains the proper understanding of the aspect of oneness between the Brahman and Jiva. He states that Jiva, being an amsa of the Brahman, has the same qualities as him. Also, Jiva Goswami explains the aspect of oneness mentioned in the scriptures serves as the medium to understand the Absolute Truth because in the material world, the consciousness is experienced only by Jivas. Right? Because matter itself is not experiencing it. As Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana states, quote, by understanding the nature of Atma as eternal and conscious, one can easily understand Paramatma. End quote. Hence, one can begin to understand the Supreme Lord, who is pure consciousness. Through Jiva, just as a person who has no understanding of the sun, globe, Brahman, can infer it upon observing the sun rays, Jiva, falling through the window. Right? Because you're using inference. That's where the examples are used for. Because they're taking you step by step from one thing to the next. That makes sense. But the whole point is that it's not that step that makes it work, because then you're simply dealing with the words. It's the Krishna's potency that allows it to work. Right? So when that potency is there, words have meanings, and when the chit potency is there, then they have transcendental meanings. So it's by Krishna's mercy that you can understand. But this is the process that is given. Right? It means you present something, you present it logically. That's just the method. But it's only when it's done to please Krishna that it actually has the effect. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, so many people are logically speaking, but it doesn't reveal the Absolute Truth. So when it's done in devotion, then it works. You know, it's just like cooking. You're cooking, the technique is going to be the same. But it's only when you cook in devotion, then you get prasadam. Otherwise, both by technique, you'll get a cooked preparation. But you'll only get prasad if it's done in devotion. Does that make sense? So the same way as logic is the method to explain things, but it's only when logic is explained with devotion that it actually reveals devotion. Is that? Yes, only with the parampara system, only with devotion.
And so when Krishna said that the parampara has been stopped, the chief potency was stopped.
Yes, and so that's why it has to be revealed again.
Yes.
Because there may be no one speaking it, no one dealing with it, and stuff like that. So,
you can say that it is a responsibility of all the devotees to maintain
yes.
the potency in our life and
Yes. So that's why then we go to great detail to appreciate and understand the transcendental position. So it's very clear. It doesn't get mixed up with things. Right. So in other words, it's not that we're not using mixed devotional service, but we should know what's pure and what's mixed. Otherwise, then we won't be able to function on the platform of pure devotion, because we'll think mixed devotion is already pure. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes the Adhikarana by drawing four inferences about how the Atma is the unchanging and conscious person based on the teachings of Pipalayana Rishi, the Maharaj Nimi, in 11th Canto, 11:3, 38, and 39, and also further refutes the Buddhist and Mayavadi's wrong ideas about the consciousness of Jiva. Anucheta 50. In order to discern the conclusion methodically and in detail, according to Sukadeva's position, Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana will be discussed in six sandarbhas. First, the scripture Bhagavatam has been described generally in the second verse as having the relationship, sambandha, of the object, vacha, and means of indicating it, vacha katha. Dharma projita kaitavo tra paramo nirmat saranam satam. Vedyam vastavam atravastu shivadam tapa trayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni krite kim va parer ishvara. Sadyo hrit yavarudyate tat kritipi shushushibhis tat krishna. Shushushubhis tat shanat. Missing one shu there. Sorry. The Supreme Lord becomes immediately captured in the heart of the accomplished devotees by hearing Bhagavatam, and even by those who have suddenly developed a desire to hear it. This does not happen with other works. In the Bhagavatam alone, created by the Lord Himself, is presented the real, permanent object, which can be understood by those without selfish intentions, and which bestows auspiciousness and release from the material world of miseries. In the Bhagavatam alone is presented the process for attaining that highest object, devoid of all material goals and liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 112. Vedyam vastavam atravastu indicates the object, vachya. The commentary says, vastu vedyam means the highest spiritual object, vastu, which is real, vastavam, to be known. In the beautiful Bhagavatam, atra, it is not a form made of material matter or material qualities, as presented in the Vaisheshika philosophy. Vedavyas speaks. Anucheta Prakashita. From Sri Jiva Toshani. Srila Jiva Goswami here informs us that the same Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana tattvas that Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami realized will be explained in greater detail in the six sandarbhas. These are briefly mentioned in the Anuchetas 8 and 9. Now he will explain the explanation of all three. Naturally, the basis of his presentation will be the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Tattva, Bhagavat, Paramatma, and Krishna Sandarbhas deal with the Sambandha Tattva. The Bhakti Sandarbha deals with Abhideya Tattva, and Preeti Sandarbha with the Prayojana Tattva. Tattva Sandarbha serves as the introduction, in that it explains the overall subject established through the six Sandarbhas. Technically, this relationship is called the Vacha, Vacha Kata, Sambandha, or the relation of the subject with the context of the book. The subject is stated in the second verse of Bhagavatam. Vedyam Vastava Matra Vastu. Absolute reality is to be understood therein. Vedyam? Vedyam Vastava. Oh, Vedyam Vastava Matra. Oh, Vedyam Vastavam. Ah, oh, okay. So I'm used to seeing his two words, so I couldn't put it together. As discussed earlier, there are various levels of manifestation of reality. But Srimad Bhagavatam gives the knowledge about the one absolute reality. Sri Krishna, who encompasses and reconciles all other realities. Sages like Kanada and Gotama based their philosophies on a certain number of elements or realities. They say that knowing these elements properly, one can become free from material miseries. For example, the Vaisheshika philosophy mentioned at the end of this Anucheta has seven elements: dravya, substance; guna, quality; karma, action; samanya, generality; vishesha, particularity; samavaya, inheritance. Oh boy. Generality, right? Ah, right? Then particularity. That's English. The same A in the same place, one's ah and one's Yeah. Right. That's why it's so weird, right? And abhava, non-existence. The Vaisheshikas try to explain the whole cosmos by these seven elements. Though it is true that an understanding of these elements leads to a realization of a certain level of reality that does not compare with the absolute reality, which is the sole subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so you're dealing with certain individuals in certain modes, and so then describing reality in a way that they, in their position, appreciate it, then that will be considered a very nice, you know, explanation. You know, it means from your position that you can understand, especially if it can uplift and give a little bit higher understanding. So that's what's going on here, is by breaking it down into these seven elements, then and categorizing everything within this, then you try to see the relationship between them, how they interact, what's the ultimate goal that you're trying to create. And they'll get a basic understanding. And it will be higher than your general, you know, public's understanding. The only difficulty, and they're basing it on the Veda. The only difficulty comes is they'll only reveal a certain level of reality. Right? Because they're still working within the modes. But they're working at a higher level, like that. So these six philosophers are working at quite a high level. But the difficulty is that they're only revealing up to a certain level also. Then you'll see is that the then when we get into the Vaishnava understandings, then that will take us beyond these six schools of the mundane into the beyond the transcendental. Right? Because then you're going to get to the aspect of prema. Does that make sense? They're going to actually reveal actual transcendental. What's that called? Turiya. That platform. You know, because the others may talk about it, but they don't really get to that solid position. It's not an actual. They're on the border of it. But then you have it, but then they're also explaining what's beyond that, that fifth level of prema. Like that. Though they generally put most emphasis on turiya. Like that, just that transcendental position and functioning in that. And so that the oneness that is there, they're talking about prema, but it's from that aspect. But then when we see what Srimad Bhagavatam in Achintabheda Veda Tattva, that's revealing the highest level of reality, because then all other things, contradictions are brought into balance. Because by Krishna, then everything else becomes. Otherwise, if Mahanarayan is the main, then there's still problems on how do you balance with Krishna and these other aspects. But up to that point, you'll see all the Vaishnava schools will agree. So they'll get to Vaikuntha and then to Maha Vaikuntha, and then it'll all work for them. Just that they may have differences in what they're considering that Maha Vaikuntha. Like that. Does that make sense? So some will go beyond that to Krishna, but still there'll be a little bit more sweetness, but we see they never get to Braj. So Bhagavatam will reveal Braj. And so then with that Achintabheda Veda Tattva, all things can be reconciled. Right? So you'll see is that for preaching, it will be the best. Because then, with the Chinta Beda Beda Tattva, you can relate to anybody in their position, because you can see how it all connects to Krishna. Yes.
And you say that the six schools, they are not connected with the six potencies?
The six schools, no.
No. The four Vaishnavpadaya have connection to some degree.
Because they're all connected to the chit potency, but within the context of their particular taste.
Yes.
Like that. So it's perfect for their taste. If you want to go to Vaikuntha, then their schools are perfect. But if you want to get to Braj, then you have to have a Chinta Beda Beda Tattva. Does that make sense? Because then, if there's a oneness of Krishna and everything, then the point comes is that, and that emphasis, that then the point is that person, the grandeur of Krishna does not, what do you call it, get in the way, doesn't create any obstacles for Krishna's sweetness. While in the other schools, it will. Because you don't have that. But here, that means the Vrajabhasis can take something that would either be considered just ordinary, or if it's they're dealing on the transcendental, it's the grandeur of the Lord, and all it does is remind them of Krishna and Vrindavan. Does that make sense? Yeah. So,
this is exactly what happened after the Govardhan Leela. They all gathered and discussed the tattva and the rasa and who is our Krishna.
Yes, yes. I mean, you see slowly through it, it starts to become obvious that he's not just anyone ordinary. But they always fall back on Garga Muni's instructions. But you see by Kurukshetra, then all these different prayers and all that, it doesn't bewilder them at all. And having been there and all that, then they would rather go back to Braj. Because there, then they don't have to, you don't have any overemphasis of his grandeur. So it doesn't bother them at that time. So we can see is that they fully understand he's the Supreme Lord. But that has no implications on their relationship with him in their particular rasa. You know, it's just like, let's say, there's somehow or another a break in the parliament, right? They're on their, whatever it is, their some holiday. And so the prime minister goes home and spend some time with his family, right? And he's there with his mom and dad and everything like that. But that he's the prime minister doesn't change any way how his mother's going to deal with him, right? Just because he's the prime minister. So you think because you're the prime minister, you know, you can still leave your socks on the floor? You know, so it doesn't matter. It'll be used as part of the rasa whenever you want, but it doesn't make any change to their relationship at all. You know, so she'll deal like that. But if she's dealing with friends, then it puts her in the senior position because her son's the prime minister. You know, what's your son doing? You know. But it doesn't change the relationship. So that's the aspect is there that a Chinta Beda Beda Tattva has that quality. That doesn't matter the situation, you can always see everything connected to Krishna, how to connect it to Krishna, and it doesn't in any way, with the word obfuscate, right? You know, Krishna's position, doesn't in any way create a cloud or a distraction from Krishna's, the relationship that the Vrajabhasis have with Krishna. Is that... So it's the best to use in Kali Yuga for preaching. It's the best to use at any time, but especially in Kali Yuga. So that's what we're saying. It's the only one that can really get through. Because otherwise, as soon as there's a doubt, people get thrown off. But if they've already been introduced to Chinta Beda Beda Tattva, doubts don't come up so easily. But if it's not introduced, and it's just introduced from the platform of some mundane, position of so-called goodness, then there's always going to be a problem. Like one temple, they're preaching to vegans and everybody came to the temple and the temple's vegan and all that, and then when it came up about that, then now it's a problem for them. You know, why would Krishna, you know, eat this? Why would he do that? You know, so they're seeing everything from their own position of mundane value, and then projecting this on Krishna, while the Chinta Beta Beta Tattva is presented in the beginning. Then they won't have this problem. You know, as Prabhupada said, if it works for you, you know, like it was a thing when sugar came up, because that was always a big thing before. It's only now coming up again, but in the 60s it was a major thing. Is that, you know, he says, you know, about eating sugar. Prabhupada says, you don't want to eat sugar, that's fine, but Krishna likes sugar, so you should be offering him sugar. You know, with that. So it's just the way it works. Though it is true that an understanding of these elements leads to realization of a certain level of reality, that does not compare with the absolute reality. That's why the point of it being part the vastu vasta matra, is that the vastava vastu, the real, really real thing, you know, like that, which is the sole subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is just about Krishna. And so even if it's talking about the different avatars and creation and that, it's all in the context of its relationship with Krishna. That's the whole point. Because it's Braja Krishna who has the design. He's the Lord of the Icha Shakti. Does that make sense? Because Maharayan, he's the Lord of Jnana Shakti. The Icha Shakti. So, because otherwise it might not make sense why Maharayan would be doing certain things. Right? But if we see it in the context of it's Krishna, then there's no problem. Right? Because he's the one who has the desire. So it's to bring everyone back to Godhead and this and that. Like many of the material worlds for punishment and for this and that. No, it's to reform the living entities to bring them back to Godhead. So it's not the punishment is enough. Right? So it wouldn't make a sense that one gets eternally punished. That you know, because then what's it for? What's the material world for? You know, if we take it as our enjoyment, then that's there. And someone who gets in the way of our enjoyment, yes, they should be eternally punished. But for God, it's about bringing everyone back to the spiritual world. Baladev Vidyabhushan. Now the author begins to show in detail the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, which were mentioned in brief. This is done according to the views of Sukadev and others. The second verse indicates the Sambandha generally without describing the Lord's Sarup qualities or vibhutis. The supreme goal is to be known is not the matter and gunas as described in the scriptures of Kannada and Gotama, which are also called vastu, right? So that's why you have vastava vastu. Is that you have vastu, it's substance. But then there's the substance of that. So where does substance, quality, action, generality, particular inheritance, non-existent, where do they come from? They come from Krishna. So Krishna is the substance of these seven elements. Does that make sense? So Krishna is substance, he is quality, he is action, he is generality. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the goals obtained by adopting various methods in the book Notes on Bhagavatam as follows. The ascending and descending processes. The pratyaksha, paroksha, and the improper passive aparoksha methods are collectively called the aroha or ascending process. Right. Means because the passive aparoksha means where you haven't heard from others, you experience. Right? But if it hasn't been experienced in the context of the descending process, then it says that it's the material. Right? Tell me something. Because the other is that you've heard from authority, and so now you apply that, and then you experience. Right? The proper aparoksha, adhoksaja, and aprakrita methods constitute the avaroha, or descending process. Ooh, that's interesting. Okay, so the aparoksha is the common point. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because when you're dealing with the five levels of consciousness, You also have, in context of those levels of consciousness, how they gain knowledge. Right? So, anamoya, then it's through pratyaksha. Right? It's just this direct sense perception. Right? Then pranamoya is through paroksha, or hearing from others. Right? That's why it's like, I'm just sitting here perfectly happy with my life. I look on internet and then find out that, you know, sugar's going to kill you, or, you know, and whatever it is that becomes our, you know, now the important thing in our life, our issue, our, you know, I say, what's that? Yeah, I can't remember it. It's a, can get the meter of it, but not the word. Oh, something like raison d'être, death? Huh? No, isn't there French something, raison d'être? Something like that. It just means the reason of existence. Maybe D-E-T-E, but there's a slash over one of the E's. You know, it may be from Latin. But, it just means, you know, the whole purpose of your, you know, the essential point of it. So now that becomes your thing and you crusade and all that. But where did it come from? You heard it from others. Right? You didn't see it. You didn't experience it. You heard it from others. So pranamoya works on that, basically, exclusively. But for the purpose of that, I can myself, through my senses, appreciate it. Then aparoksha means it's experienced, but not coming from anybody else. Means, and it's something that it's not a direct, aspect of experience. The example being given of the, you sleep at night, and you're unaware, but in the morning I can ask you how you slept, and you can say. Right? Does that make sense? Because you're experiencing it, but as soon as you start to describe it, now it's you're working on paroksha. Now you're explaining it to the other. You've experienced, but you're explaining it. Right? Then, adhoksaja means that the Lord descends down into things. That's the metaphysics. That's the primary creation. How Krishna is any of it. When we talk about the, you know, let's say the childhood and the childness, that's the primary creation. That's adhoksaja. Right, and then if that's adhoksha. Then aparoksha, if you're following this transcendental method, then the Lord will descend down into that. It means what is given in Scripture, you're following it to please the Lord, then He'll be present in that. Otherwise, He's not directly present. Right? Then aprakrita means the transcendental position of the Lord. So when we hear from parampara, like that with that chit potency, that's the aprakrita. Then that same Lord, He expands into everything. You could say like the universal form in that, and then how He pervades everything, how everything's connected to Him, right? And then based on Scripture, we will work in particular areas that are appropriate for us, you know, and that aspect. Then we're dealing with, you know, how the Lord and Paramatma in that aspect and how He pervades everything. So that's the descending. The ascending means that you see it with your senses, then you discuss with others and all this, and then you come to an experience. Right? So they basically don't get above that platform. So it's very rare anybody actually is at the platform of adhoksaja, and let alone aprakrita. So that's why we're saying is that though they're dealing on these levels, but they're not actually getting something beyond. Does that make sense? So what you can see is that nobody gets beyond that, beyond manamoy, basically. And that's on a good day. Right? Does that make sense? No?
Yeah. Dealing, so can we say it's a theory on that level, but actually the level of consciousness and dealing with others is lower than...
Yes, that could say. Because that means they're dealing with the transcendental, so they're trying to be on that level. But the thing is they're just going by their experience of it. Mm-hmm. But it's not coming down, it's not descending, so it's only an ascending process. So they may touch on that. They may touch on the Brahman. Just like every living entity, it's like what in the modern they call a moment. Someone's having a moment. That moment, why it's a moment, why it's so significant, is because you're actually in contact with Krishna as Brahman in that aspect that they're looking for him. That's why it has that significance. Does that make sense? Otherwise, a moment of something, why would it have any value unless it has something there? But it's only their experience of it. They can't, when they explain it, they're not experiencing it. So that's why they may, through the ascending, get to that aparoksha platform. But they don't really get above that. So they'll experience Brahman in their that moment or that liberation. But the problem is it's just that experiential. They can't really explain it because they've attained it through the ascending process. While the devotees can function on that platform and explain it because it's from the descending process. So it's not dependent upon aparoksha. You can explain it from positions above that. Does that make sense? Well, when they talk, they're going below that. They're dropping down to paroksha. Well, for us, then we're describing from adhoksita, like that. Or if one's realized, then from aprakita. So all the Bhagavatam, it's all aprakita. Right? Okay. So that's why it's so important, because to have that contact. Because then by that regular contact, then eventually it says all misgivings in the heart are removed. So that's the only way to get rid of misgivings, is through Bhagavatam. We think it's going to be through some political or social paradigm, then it won't happen. It can't happen. Because those paradigms have come from people. And so, yes, by applying them you can experience something. And that's why someone committed to some ism, it now and again experiences something that gives them their drive. But it's come from just what other people have perceived themselves. It's not coming from the transcendental platform. So only the descending then can actually connect you all the way up. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, let's say, even we say the Adhokshaja, where the Lord comes down into the primary creation as everything. You know, that's what it said. Prabhupada says that's the grossest form of the Lord, or the material form of the Lord, is that Adhokshaja. So, then in that position, how would all these other six schools explain that? Right? Because if Prakriti is the ultimate element, everything's coming from there, and if there's a supreme, it's beyond, then all these different qualities that are there are coming from Prakriti. So, does that make sense? So, they can't actually get to the platform of Adhokshita. Because they don't accept it. Does that make sense? They can't experience it because they don't accept it. And so only when you accept the Vaishnava school is that the Supreme Lord Himself, who is a person, then through His energies, then expands and they transform and all that. Then it has meaning. So that's why for these other schools, it means they work on some level of the metaphysical, but it's very difficult for them because they don't have the advantage of the chit potency to bring it alive. Right? For the devotees that hearing in that, because it's connected with Krishna, therefore it just becomes part of a natural understanding. But for them, these are very difficult. To be able to always think according to this seven elements will be very difficult. Or even as Shankya, then the 24 that we use the same. You know, because they just take those 24 and put them into these seven. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just they don't have access because they don't accept this existence.
Okay. Yeah. Can we say that in order to explain the Lord and His existence, they have to bring Him down
yes.
to the material level, then it makes sense? makes sense.
Yes, because that's why you see it's always him as a person, as a form, is always material. Right, from the impersonal, when jnana becomes, when Brahman accepts this jnana, then it becomes Ishwara, transforms into Ishwara. So then that's the whole point, is that the what's beyond the transcendental has no qualities for them. So they cannot understand how all the qualities here can use them to connect to the Supreme. Therefore, those who are interested in liberation, they have to use renunciation. And that renunciation means not dealing with the material energy. Like for us, it's a yukta vairagya, means dealing with it without the attachment. That's actual renunciation. Because it's not yours to renounce, it's Krishna's. But their thing is mine to renounce, so I don't deal with it. And it's religious, it's pious, it's purifying. And so for a particular point in their spiritual development, it has advantage. But the point is ultimately they can't understand the ultimate reality with this. They can't get to that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they have to bring it down because they don't have entrance into that. They don't know Aprakrita other than Brahman. And that's just one feature. And that one feature of Brahman doesn't explain Adhokshita. So that's why he's saying the contradictions. Once you accept the Supreme Lord, then these contradictions go away. Right? So all the Vaishnava schools accept Aprakrita. And so that's there. But then within the transcendental contradictions between Krishna and Vishnu, that they can't explain. That's only if you accept the Chintamayavada Tattva. So we can see is that technically what we've been given is the highest. Right? And then technically some others may appear in certain aspects of religion to be so well developed and all that, because we're not used to it. But as we mentioned before, when it comes down to the religious processes, ours are much more complicated. Okay. It's just like, let's say you go to, a big Vaikuntha temple, and they offer aarti. Basically, they'll have a pot with duna in it, and they'll offer various kinds of lamps. You know, camphor lamps and ghee lamps of different kinds of wicks, different shapes of lamps, and all that. And that's it. So they actually only offer two things. Dupe and deep. Right? So for us, we call that a dupe arti. That's for us is the simple arti. So to offer all these other things, they don't have that concept. Not that they don't use those things. But they don't use them in an arti. They use them at different parts of the puja throughout the day. But we'll use them just in one. So we're thinking, oh, ours is so simple and theirs is complex. No, ours is complex. That's why they don't use it. But because it's so perfectly balanced, it doesn't carry the flavor of complexity. That's why I don't think, oh, ours is simple and theirs is the developed, the sophisticated one. But the point is we can add theirs to ours, and it doesn't in any way affect ours. Let's say you're doing, for Janmashtami, you're doing a special, or Nrisingha Chaturdashi, special arti. We can add in all those lamps. I don't know, have you seen them here sometimes they use them that? So we can add them all in, and it doesn't affect our arti. It just brings out more of that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sometimes
It can be either. The point is that the grammar will always do, but the point is do they go back to the roots, and then the roots, do they go back to Vedic grammar? You understand? Any scholar that you're dealing with in the modern academy does not deal with Vedic Sanskrit. They all deal with the modern Sanskrit. They may know some grammar and be familiar with the Vedic, but they don't deal in that. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not one of the things that they do. Because when you change the swara in the word, or the note, like you have Brahman. Now Brahman, depending upon the swara, the note that is how it's said, it'll mean either the Supreme Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, or Lord Brahma, or the Jiva. It can mean all these depending upon the swara. So they're unaware of these things. So for them, a classical Sanskrit, they'll have Brahman, and they'll have one translation for it. For the Vedic Sanskrit, you can have all these. And then when you have a root, you can do so much with it. Why? In their own spoken language, they don't use words in various ways.
So if one word has different meanings,
yes.
Our Acharya sees those meanings, what is it?
Well, you have the context. No? It's just like this. Let us say...
For example, Sanskrit word. Srila Prabhupada explained that the Brahman or impersonal Brahman and another shloka is Bhagavan.
Yeah, that's just what I said. It's that because it goes back to those roots. Okay, here. I don't know if one of you sent this. Somebody sent this. Just reading from this to show that there can be different meanings to words. Do you see this? Five deadly terms used by women? No? No one here sent me? Okay. First one, fine. This is the word women use to end an argument when she knows she is right and you need to shut up. Right? So he says, fine. Means you're arguing and all that. She just says, fine. So the man thinks, oh, she's okay with it. It just means it's time to stop talking because you're wrong and I'm right. Right? So does it mean fine? No. Two, nothing. Means something and you need to be worried. Oh, it's nothing. No, but you need to be worried. So it's the opposite. Three, go ahead. This is a dare, not permission. Do not do it. Yeah. Go ahead. See what happens. Yeah. Four, whatever. A woman's way of saying, screw you. You know, this, that, whatever. You know, it just means it's a nice way of just saying, yeah. Right? And five, it's okay. She is thinking long and hard how and when she will... And when you will pay for your mistake. Okay? And these are just commonly used positions. Does that make sense? So they're trying to give that one word only has one meaning. But how is that? Isn't science supposed to be sophisticated? So it means an atom does only one function and all that? You know? So, see, they take it and they find more and more applications, more and more divisions, like that. Because anything you deal with in science, it has its things that it does one way and then its opposites. Like, I mean, I don't understand it, but someone, an electrical engineer, was explaining that certain things on electricity, how you think it would work, it's actually opposite of that. And it does all these far-out things. It works like this and this, but then in this situation, it's opposite. Right? You know, so... Therefore, why is it that this word has to have one meaning and one meaning alone? Isn't that kind of more... That's what children learn. They learn one meaning, and then when there's a second meaning, they get confused. So it means that in maturity, that you can understand the word has a multifarious meanings according to the situation it's in. So depending on what's being described, what's there, then you can understand the context. So like that, that's the difference. Okay. By adoption of the ascending process, the perverse individual soul strives to realize his suicidal end by the positive and negative perverse manipulation of mundane experience gained through direct and indirect sense perception. By the descending process, the soul is enabled to strive for realization of the unalloyed service of the Absolute by the honest exercise of his unreserved receptive attitude to the initiative of the Absolute when he is pleased to come down to the plane of his tiny perverse cognition. So there's one is that tiny. Fabulous, huh? And they're saying that we don't have technical stuff. This is Bhakti Vinod Thakur. This is 150-year-old language. Before people talked like this. You know, nowadays it's just like, yeah, cool, yeah, and that's it. I noticed nowadays you hardly hear yes. Before it was, yes was the proper thing, and yeah was considered uncultured. Now yeah is just common. You know, yeah, but it's Y-E-A-H. But most of the time now you see it's just Y-A. Shorter and shorter, yeah. So, that the living entity, when they try the ascending process, then they're trying to manipulate the material energy directly and indirectly to come to the level of spiritual suicide. So the whole thing is perverse, how they're dealing with it. It's who they are, material energy, how they deal with it for their own purposes of liberation and all that. What we see in the descending process, then the living entity is allowed to endeavor for understanding the Supreme, where he says, by honest exercise, right? Unreserved receptive attitude, right? So it means the living entity has the nature to be able to understand the Supreme Lord. And then, when the Lord is pleased to come down to the plane of his tiny perverse cognition. So, the living entity, in his position of mundane consciousness, or the perverse cognition, right? Because you have cognition, which is the actual, and perverse cognition means mundane consciousness, right? So, Krishna is coming down into Adhoksaja so that we can appreciate, and that even to the point of paroksha, that we'll experience. Right, based on Aunt Krishna's entering it, because of the honest attempt to serve him through the parampara. So make sense? So you can see is that the one allows it the natural concept consciousness to work. The other one, they can't get beyond mundane consciousness. Yes.
Bhagavatam being on the level of aprakrit. Does it mean that the speaker of the Bhagavatam should be on the same level?
Well, that's why I was pointing out before in the previous Adhikarana about the all three speakers are on that same platform. Yes. So that's why it has to be established that Bhagavatam means the Vedic literatures are there for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. The Bhagavatam is committed to that, and we see is that it's the explanation. Or the exposition of Vyasadeva's realization, right? Of the knowledge he's gained from Narad Muni, but it's his realization of that. And then these three speakers are on that platform of realization. Therefore, the Sandarbhas are not going to be explaining the Vedic concepts from that position of transcendence. That is understood by these three speakers. Does that make sense? So that's why there may be a difference. There's seeming a difference because the level of realization, the level of reality is higher. So what's being given, that's why it says the highest absolute truth. It means there's the absolute truth and there's the highest. It's just like you have Brahman is the absolute truth. Paramatma is higher than that. But Bhagavan is the highest. And then within Bhagavan you have him in Vaikuntha, which is purely, we would call it on reverence. Right? Mm-hmm. Then you have Dwarka, which has some sweetness, and then you have Braj, which is just the sweetness. So then, even within Bhagavan, you have those levels. So then, this will be of the three. Then it'll be Bhagavan, and of Bhagavan, it'll be that topmost position. So that's the supreme. That's the Vastava Vastu. So that's what's being established, because we want to establish that that's there. Otherwise, someone may say, oh, no, but this or that. You have to be able to appreciate it. Bhagavatam is established as the absolute truth. That's how that is appreciated. Means that if you're not seeing through the eyes of Bhagavatam, then you are using something else. Because if you're using it from another sampradaya, then that's fine. It may be descending, but, you know, how far will it take you? But if it's not being from that and not based on Shastra, it is exclusively ascending. And it will only function within the perverse consciousness. It will only resonate in the perverse consciousness, perversity of the perverse consciousness. So it won't, someone understanding pure devotion, it won't have any value. So we have to make that very, very clear on what we're dealing with here. So this is the Da authority. Otherwise, then others, oh, but you know, that's later or this or that. No, this is the realization of Yas. So that's how it has to be perceived. Because someone, like you said, says, oh, but you know, we have to have morality and ethics. That's very important. Okay, great, nice. From where? You know, where's the authority from? Where do we get them? How do we define what it is? How do we define the elements of it? What aspects are there? Where do we define that? Then right there, that's where your problem is. Because it will be, you know, from paroksha, if it's mundane. You know, or it might be their own feeling. Great. Does that make sense? So that's why. Now, you can also see this from another, when we're talking about, we're looking at, oh, someone just feels, and we're putting it at a low level, right? Because in the descending process, that comes down to our level of tiny perverse cognition, and from there, then we can experience the transcendence. From there, then it can come up to the transcendental. So that's the whole point, is the aparoksha that has the aspect, is that's where you're dealing is yourself. So it's either the highest you can get on the mundane, or it's how far the transcendence will come down to our position. Right? Now, for the others, this aparoksha is the highest you get. So when they say, no, but he feels, for them, that is the highest platform you can get. So they're thinking it's actually very glorious, while we just say, oh, that's just the feeling. You understand? But the whole point is you can see where the problem comes. One is it takes it as the highest, so it actually trumps logic, right? While in the Vedic, in the devotional, then it's the lowest, because it means the experience you're having on your level of realization. But there are higher levels, so then you're trying to get to experience on the platform of a Prakriti, right? Then it has some very real value. Does that make sense? So that's why we put it as just, that's not enough. But now you can see that's where the problems come, is because the levels, they seem to be, we're talking about the same thing, but one is the bottom of one and one's the top of the other. Like that. So, yeah, so, John. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.